Hey, sweetie.
I'll pull it to
you. Oh, no.
You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
I'm going to be a man, and if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. This man just gave me a job. I'm not signing that shit.
There's a lot I got to say, but I ain't going to do it here because it's free today. I ain't going to curse.
Welcome back, everyone, to the NBL Pocket Podcast. You may have noticed the new theme tune to the show. Special thanks to Cam Luke, Liam San Maria, Brian Conklin, Ricky Grace, and Corey Homicide Williams for those sound grabs. I'm joined this episode by Andrew Kenyon. We had a lot of fun talking about Bill Simmons, the NBA draft, NBL 21 team rankings so far, power rankings, as teams exist on paper as of this moment. And then we go in depth on Melbourne United. You may have seen that they've just released a video talking about their off-season so far and off-season ambitions. And then we lastly rounded out by talking about the big ticket locals still around. So Matthew Dellavedova just signed in Cleveland, but there are other names and we go through those. A reminder, join me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at NBL Pocket Pod. Support the show on Patreon. You'll find the link in the description. You'll get articles and a little bit more exclusive audio on there, especially when the season starts, which, fingers crossed, should be early next year. Also, looking to buy a book, do it via the link in the description, the Booktopia link in the description. That helps out the show, as well as your good self. In fact, I've got a very interesting book offer coming for Christmas that's sort of NBL related that could be fun. So keep your eyes and ears peeled here. But enough of that. Let's jump into it with Andrew Kenyon. Actually, first of all, Joseph Corr is my name from Stats Perform Media. I'm joined by
Andrew Kenyon coming in from Perth. A long-time NBL fan since 1987.
I saw
which is
that.
Purely aging me. Gosh, I'm old, but I remember all the great highlights.
The NBL of the 90s is not too dissimilar from how Ernest Hemingway describes Paris of the 20s. Thank you very much.
Everybody always reflects back on it, but I think we need to put the 90s era to bed. I think we need to move on from that and say now that was like 30 years ago. Sadly enough. No. Let's say that the 2020s are going to be the best that the NBL has ever
been. I concur. Let's jump on. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. Bill Simmons, the draft, power rankings, Melbourne United, locals still available. Let's start with this Bill Simmons thing. Now, I don't know, Andrew, if you saw the original offending article from Bill Simmons on his podcast where he called the league garbage. Did you see it and what was your reaction?
No, I didn't. I've actually taken to listening to his podcast less. I used to be a devout listener and that was basically how I followed the NBA is by listening to his podcast.
How often would you listen and how long ago did you fade away?
Well, look, I listened to him from when he commenced podcasting. So when, you know, right in the early days. So, and I was a loyalist. Yeah, because I used to read his articles and everything that he would write. He was an awesome writer. So I followed him to his podcasts, listened all the way up, I would say, until maybe last year or so. He just started pumping out too many of them. I couldn't keep up. And he was just, it just became meandering where, you know, it was just like this long, you know, long meandering story.
Rogan, 2-4 hours. Yep.
Yeah. It's like, I don't have time for this. So I sort of gave up. I still keep a watching brief on it. And if there's something interesting in the show notes, I'll have a listen. But I'm much more selective. But no, I didn't. So I didn't see the original or hear the original, but I've heard all about it.
I mean, the original to me just read as, I think he meant to say the team was garbage. I'm not making excuses for him. I genuinely believe he meant to say the games I watched were garbage because the team was garbage. And I don't think that's terribly unfair of that team and the way they played and the way they, you know, they had the imports go down with injury, Aaron Brooks, and the way they tried to replace him was, I mean, I wouldn't use the word garbage, but it wasn't good. What's the opposite of garbage? Treasure? What's a treasure?
Well, if all he watched was the Hawks running, what was the replacement import's name? I've even forgotten.
Darrington Hobson or Billy Preston.
Yeah, like if you watched them at all, yeah, garbage. I was saying that was garbage. Those two guys were garbage. But that doesn't make the league, that organization, you know, everything around it garbage.
And I thought he just bit off more than he could chew there. I think those podcasts, they're done live. They're difficult. Sometimes you don't quite find a word and you spit it out. So I can, again, not making excuses for him, but I can see what he was talking about, or I think I know what he meant or wanted to say. But nonetheless, he did call it garbage and didn't give any retraction or anything like that. But what did you think of the NBL response and the NBL media response?
It was too polite. Yeah, they kind of like, so the only response I've heard is what the host on Overtime said.
And Homicide,
fair enough. He pushed back a little harder, and as I would expect, because that's his approach to life, really. But I thought the response on Overtime was a bit almost apologetic. Well, yeah, like, come on, guys. I think stand up for yourselves and say, no, it's not garbage, and these are the five reasons why, and turn it into an opportunity and say, look, if you think that, give us an opportunity to change your mind. We're going to furnish you with some highlights. We're going to come on, have a chat. You know, reach out. Can we get you on our NBL Overtime show? And let's work this out.
I think that's the good one. Start a dialogue. Like, if you say it's garbage, that's like, all right, maybe you think that, and then we'll try and change your mind, or at least not try and change it. We'll say what we want. But more than anything, like you've said something, we have the right to reply. And you're going to get it, and you know, get him on the phone, and I don't think Simmons would be closed off to that. I think he'd be relatively open, but it's a chance to kind of, you know, align the NBL with the Ringer a little bit more, which is always a good thing. I will say that. So I came out and said I think it needs a pretty immediate response. I feel a bit bad. I mean, a man is allowed to sit in thought, and I think the guys on Overtime sat in thought for a while and said what they thought. And I kind of like when Liam Santamaria said that we met Kevin O'Connor at the Summer League and, you know, they were friendly, and then to not kind of go to bat for the NBL, like, it's just the implication I got was that he sort of said that was a bit snaky in a way. I was like, oh, nice in the person, but then when it comes down to it. But then again, Kevin O'Connor has no obligation to them or the league, but yeah, I like that little human element. And then I like the way Corey Homicide put it, where he says it's kind of bully tactics. Like, you're over in the US criticizing a league that's, you know, monetarily much more than the NBA for what gain? You know what I mean? And in a way that wasn't particularly articulate and or accurate, obviously. So yeah, I like the way Corey Homicide put it when he said bully tactics and put a monetary sort of how they were trying to deplete money from it and deplete the value of a product that they really didn't have the right or the proper information to do so. So I appreciated that from them.
So hopefully this isn't the end of it. I would love for the league to engage with Bill Simmons more try and like leverage it to hell. He's got such a massive following. Even if it's a debate and you come out holding your line, you know, Bill Simmons continues to say it's garbage. That's eyeballs on the league. And is that such a bad thing?
I agree.
But if you just let it die now, it's, well, he said it was garbage and that's the end of it. I think you need to ante up.
The Ringer Podcast Network, I think I counted the other day, has like 41 podcasts.
Jeez.
And from everything from obviously NBA and sports and baseball and things, but to stuff like cooking, films, The Bachelor, like some stuff they're reaching for. My thought is, if I was the NBL, I'd go, how about an NBL podcast through the Ringer? Or even better, an international basketball podcast where you do a little bit of NBL, a little bit of EuroLeague, a little bit of those European leagues, you know, just so Americans or people can get a bit of a taste. They've got a pretty good international following, you know, just a thought. If you're going to do, you know, a podcast on sushi, I mean, how you can come up with content week to week on that, on the Ringer, you know, why not foreign leagues? Because they do not have one. They have no interest in foreign leagues, which I think speaks to them and their clientele.
Yeah, US-centric.
But, you know, at the same time, you can bet on foreign leagues. You can't bet on sushi, not through any formal channels anyway. So
what I'm hearing as you're talking, this is it morphing into a little job application
you're
doing here? You know, like NBL Pocket Podcast brought to you by The Ringer, host, Joe Corr. Yeah, get some good ads.
I wouldn't turn it down. You know, I think they sold the Ringer network to Spotify for some 200 some million. So yeah, I'd take it. Yeah. But I'm not holding my breath, I'll tell you that much. Let's jump onto the draft.
Yeah.
Exciting. Did you watch it?
Nah, I didn't watch it. I tuned in a couple of times during the live, you know, thing online, just seeing the countdown and who went up next. But I got in a bit late, so all the major Australian related action had already happened.
Mm. LaMelo Ball went number 3. There was a time there where I was like, oh, could go 1. Oh, could go 2. 3, I think, still a success.
Oh yeah,
it's not the number 1 pick, but still a great success.
Yep. But I think saying number 1, I mean, a lot of it's for ego. If you actually look out and look back in history, you know, who's been the best player overall? Was it the number 1 guy or was it number 3 guy? Yeah. Like, it doesn't really matter, I don't think, at that level, apart from, you know, being able to say I was number 1 pick. I don't know if there's a financial benefit or whether those are all bracketed in the
slightly
same.
Yeah, I think at the end of a 3+1, your average number 1 pick sort of 5 to 10 mil better off. I think it's actually less. I think it's like 5 to 6 or something like that. So, you know, it's good. That's $6 million. That's nothing to sneeze at, but you know, I think he'll be just fine. I think he goes to Charlotte as well. Minnesota seemed like quite a decent team or quite a talented team on paper.
Yep.
And then if he'd gone to Golden State, he wouldn't have got any time. And now he goes to Charlotte, where it's just a team that's forever just been roll the balls out, 20 wins, 20 to 30 wins, good luck. Oh, well, you tried your best. See you next year. So he gets a chance to, in a way, kind of do it all over again with a little bit more structure than at the Hawks, I would like to think. But the one I want to talk to you about is Hampton.
Yeah.
We watched him play. Went to a very different situation to Ball. He was projected, when he first came to the NBA, he was you know, top 5 in his class, top 10 projected pick. Coming into the draft, he was sort of lottery projected, top 14, top 16 was a lot of the draft boards. He went 24th.
Yeah, really slipped, didn't he? Well, according to projections, he slipped.
According to projections, and the question I really have is, did he slip because people don't think he's good, or because he isn't good, or because of his lack of exposure because he's on the other side of the world playing for New Zealand? What do you think?
I would hope that the lack of exposure argument isn't really a true one. I mean, we heard constantly through the season how many scouts were heading to New Zealand and watching the games and everything. In terms of actually seeing him play, I don't think that could be an issue. Did he play not enough minutes or, you know, wasn't there in crunch time? Maybe that would play into it. But I would hope that the scouts, like, this is their job. You hope that they could infer, you know, how he's going to go a little bit more than just watching him in the 20 minutes, you know. They're a bit more analytical than that, I would think. Yeah. So I wonder if it's more just situational on draft day. You know, they're like, what does our team need? Where are gaps? What's available? Right. Like point guard, wing, sort of off guards like he is, they're the most common player in the league. You know, maybe you're trying to fill some gaps in different positions. So I think maybe part of it is just him not fitting the needs of the team on the board at the time, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't debate that thinking, but I do kind of disagree. I think, are there 23 players better than RJ Hampton? And then also the question of, well, why was he ever projected 5 or top 10, you know? And I think it's obviously unfair to put all the blame on the Breakers or the NBL for where he got drafted, but I do feel like I'm a bit more cynical about the NBA draft. I think a lot of it is a total popularity contest. And if you're popular with scouts, if you're popular with people, if you've got a Twitter, a good following and good media presence, you'll do better than if you don't. And I think he did to a degree fall off people's radar. I mean, he fell off people's radar in Australia and in New Zealand with his play because he just didn't play. Mm. And he didn't play. He played so few games. He missed most of the season. And I think it really comes down to a couple of questions for me. So my first question is, if you answer these questions in order, you kind of get your thing. Is he good? Is he a good player? Is he capable of being good? Were the 23 players picked ahead of him objectively a better prospect or player than he is? And then the third question you kind of have to ask yourself is it important to go higher in the draft when you're debating whether the next star is a good idea? Because if you think, oh, he was better off going to New Zealand because he'll be a better pro in 5 years' time, or are you of the opinion it's better to go higher in the draft because that just gives you more chance. I'm very much of that opinion. The higher you go in the draft, the more a team is investing in you, the more the lengthier the contract, the more money they're going to make sure they get an internal a return on investment, or are more likely to. Going where he did in 24 outside of the lottery, he's guaranteed 2 years, but after that, it's a bit murky. The money's okay. It's not great compared to lottery. So I wonder, do you think he'd come to the next Stars again? If you went to Time Machine and went back to the start of the year, do you think he'd do it? Do you think he should?
I think for him as a professional player, becoming a good professional player, I think, yes, he was good to do it and he should do it again. I don't think that should be the goal of Next Stars, though. Next Stars is about showcasing, and that's where Ball got the opportunity and Hampton didn't. So I would think he wouldn't do it again. Rather, you're better off just, having
a I like that word showcase. Time. I like that word showcase. You know, LaMelo Ball got to showcase, Hampton didn't. He was started, was probably promised minutes, and then fell behind Zach Henry towards the end of the year. And I think it's an interesting thing where I think a subtle little thing in this debate is also when he decided to go to the Breakers, that was a bigger deal than when LaMelo Ball decided. Remember when Hampton did that? It was such a big deal. It was like, massive. Whoa, this guy.
Yeah.
He's, you know, not since Brandon Jennings had a player kind of done that and not gone the college route. And when he did it, it was very much, and his big thing was like, I'm blazing a trail. I think people over there kind of went, oh, really? Crossed their arms and went, oh, okay, you're going to blaze a trail? Like, it's kind of like that first turtle out of the nest. They usually don't make it because either they're pecked off by a predator or they get worn down in the sand, and then the next turtle out can tread in his footprints and they make it to the ocean. Yeah. And I feel like he kind of got a little bit of that. And I think, to quote a film, I don't know if you're a Jurassic Park fan. Do you like that film?
Oh, I've seen them. Yeah.
Of course, the first one where they're having lunch and they're debating the ethics of the park, and Ian Malcolm goes, you know, your scientists were so preoccupied about whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. And I really think if Hampton sat down and said, I could go overseas, but should I? And I think he would decide, if he's really looking at him, his skill set, his slimmer frame, am I going to cope against guys in their late 20s, early 30s who are going to bash me around? I'm actually going to go the college route and showcase. I really think they'd come to that conclusion.
Yeah. I think maybe the next Stars, looking at it pragmatically, perhaps it's better for the second round players to come out, learn some, develop their body, develop a few fundamental skills, and maybe show that they can fit in a professional culture. Rather than these first round lottery pick guys who
I totally agree.
Want to show out.
I think as a showcase, as a draft position incubator and improver, I don't think the Next Stars would be the description of it. As a developmental experience, professionalism incubator, I think that's far more accurate. And I think that's the way that the program was transitioning late last year with Luzada, don't you think?
Yeah. Just like, get him better. Get him, get his English skills up. You know, all the off-court stuff as much as anything, rather than these guys who are guaranteed picks. What have they got really got to gain from it?
The other thing I'll say is there are two draft guys who came out. I believe they were Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz was the guy who I definitely know came out to both Wollongong and New Zealand, spent personal time with Hampton. He loved them both. Yeah. He was like, LaMelo Ball's the number one pick and Hampton should be in the top 16.
Yeah.
And that did make me laugh because everyone else was like, on the draft day, telecast, he's okay, he's all right. But this guy who had the hands on contact, it's almost as if he really enjoyed his all expenses paid trip out to Australia, and that may have influenced his thinking.
The one thing I hope, though, I hope the NBA kicks off, and I hope both these guys kick some ass, because that is going to be great, and that will change the narrative around the Next Stars. If they come out and play really well, everyone will be like, oh wow, And that suddenly becomes a credible opportunity, I think. And they're like, oh, maybe that. And then maybe next time the next RJ Hampton doesn't fall down the board and he actually gets picked early.
So
a lot relying on
the fate of it is on Ball, especially if he's He's very good. But ultimately, and then, you know, a couple of Australian guys went. Josh Green went to Dallas, which is exciting for him. I've seen maybe one or two of his games and a couple of his highlights. Seems like a decent player. Got no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. But obviously, he's been talked about for a longest time. He's sort of here, this name. I'll be, you know, good on him. It seems,
What's interesting, speaking of next stars in that, Mojave King is playing for Cairns and he's projecting the top 10. So, and I'm so interested to see what does that translate onto an NBL court? What does a projected top 10 in all seriousness, because I think Cairns will treat him seriously.
Yep.
They will give him, you know, more than Hampton, less than Ball and put him in a nice little spot. What does that actually, you know, physically translate to? Yeah. I'm really excited to see him.
And then we've got Justinian Jessup. This year.
Justinian Jessup. You know, again, like him getting drafted late in the second round, that is a bit of a stamp for, like, I mean, I immediately thought, okay, that means he could probably be a good contributor off the bench for the Hawks, you know? 10 to 15 minutes, reliable shooter, could probably hold up to it. So it's a stamp for him, and I was excited for him to go, which is good. Terry Armstrong's probably the saddest part of this whole
thing.
I don't know what his next move is. I don't know what he does.
I just feel that just got sort of stench all over it, that whole whole arrangement, doesn't it? It just didn't seem, never seemed right.
I wrote about this on Patreon where he's got more agents, like to count his agents, he has to take his gloves and shoes and socks off. Their websites are a little underdone, to put it nicely. And their client list, there's not one player on there who's a pro. They're all people up and coming. Now, that's real GM. Those lists are not 100% accurate or exhaustive, but still, most of them, they give you a pretty good idea, a good impression of what's going on. Their agency didn't jump off the page.
You know those sort of scams that go around with these young players who are told that they can sign with, like, you know, sign with the Perth Wildcats, and they get presented a contract and they think they're in the big time and they put it all over Instagram and it's just a giant scam.
Yeah.
Sort of had the same. I mean, obviously it wasn't a scam because he had a uniform and he was on the bench of Phoenix. But I don't know. It just had that same sort of whiff.
I don't know who got sold the false bill of goods here. Did Southeast Melbourne kind of think, all right, we're getting a prospect, and then he arrives like, ooh, a bit rawer than we thought, or did he? You know, was it the other way around? Did he kind of get stung? I honestly think there was a Next Stars contract, and the agent went, great, 10-12%. Yeah. Thank you. Yoink. Yep. What's that per situation? I'm sure it'll be fine. That's just my guess. Yeah, it's just certainly the way it looked. But yeah, sad for him. So hopefully and the thing is, he's got a second year on that deal. Is that a player option? Is that a team option? Is that a quote unquote mutual option? That's my favorite. that's both of them together, but neither one. So I don't know what's going to happen with him if he, you know, if he comes back or not, or where he goes. But I really do wish him luck.
Yeah.
You want to jump on? We spoke about Cairns for a little bit. They've done that major signing with Cam Oliver. We spoke about that. Yep. Scott Machado, obviously. We'll have a quick word about him.
I've just got to pull you up just one moment while we're just talking NBA, if I can, just real quick.
Do it.
Just because there's been a few movements, you know, noting that Aaron Bain's gone to Toronto.
Yeah.
Will Magnay is, I think, still in doubt.
He's gone.
The big one for me is Jayshon Tate. Package deal with Will Weaver into the league.
Listen,
this is huge.
I forgot about this. Good thing you pulled me up. You know, he's got, or I say, why not? Like, and it shows you that where the NBL is at. First and second teamers can be borderline starters, borderline rotation guys. You know, even a guy like Daniel Johnson, could Daniel Johnson be the eighth best player on an NBA team? It is. Prime when he's a bit younger and a bit more athletic, probably. Certainly guys like Mitch Creek can contribute. Certainly guys like Sean Long, Trimble, Cam Oliver, Nick Kay. I mean, here's the thing, right? And this is where looking at the draft and who went and whatever. I mean, if you're an NBA scout and you're genuinely looking at the NBL and that final series, let's say.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'd go, oh, Tate's quite a good player. But you'd also by that virtue go, oh, that Nick Kay. Gee, you know.
Exactly.
Attacks the offensive rebounds, better shooter from the outside than Kay, and also, unlike Tate, can make free throws.
Yeah.
You know, Tate's going to struggle with free throws. He shoots them at maybe 50-something percent.
Yeah.
If you can't make free throws, you can't play in the fourth quarter, but or really at any point in the game. So that's where I'm like, what are these scouts kind of looking at? And I know Tate would have better athleticism, but I mean, Nick Cave,
yeah,
was a better player, I think.
It's amazing. I tell you what, it does say, let's hitch our wagon to Will Weaver. You know, we may have spoken a little ill of him in the past, but man, I want to become friends with that guy because he seems to look after his dudes.
Well, I heard that Tate was on a pretty minimal contract at the Kings. How much of this was Pongrass, who did work in the Memphis front office,
yes.
And then Weaver, who's got, was it sort of like, hey, we'll take, you know, take care of us and we'll take care of you on the back end with, you know, we will aggressively pursue an NBA option. And I mean, now we're off topic a little bit, but I'm going to go for it. Like Weaver taking, because he had a 2-year deal with the Kings, I believe. He was meant to coach this year. He was contracted.
Yeah.
So he's broken contract. Going from a head coach to an assistant coach, even if it's a better league, and I'd definitely still take the NBA assistant job, most would.
Yeah.
But still, that is a demotion of sorts. It's a better league. You know, you're a smaller fish in a bigger pond, but, you know, I think I interviewed Phil Smythe for his, and I said, oh, were you an assistant at any time? And I got the sense that he kind of took it as a bit of a slight. He was like, nope, no, never.
Oh, right. Okay.
I hope I'm saying that right. Because it is, when your head, the jump between head and assistant coach is big. So did Weaver kind of go, well, I promised Tate I'd kind of get to the NBA and give him this leg up. So I kind of got to take the assistant coach job. I don't think that's the case, but while we're talking.
Yeah. So I'm really interested to see how he goes, how much playing time he gets.
3 years. Some of that signed to a 1-year, see how it goes. He's got guaranteed money, 3 years. Good for him.
Jeez. So there we go.
There you go.
All right. That was my NBA intermission.
That's the dip of the toe into that pool. Let's go to these power rankings. So we're talking about Scott Machado. He's just signed. Other than Cotton, he's the second best player in the league. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Casper Ware. He used to be in that conversation, but
used to be in that conversation. Anymore. Maybe, hey, with the departure of Weaver and a bit of a change, who knows what happens to Casper Ware. I'm really excited to see that. But again, that's a departure. Cairns, obviously.
So good for them.
Kamalova, amazing for them, and they just improve. Let's do our power rankings before we say too much about it, any team.
Yep.
Do you want to go 9 up to 1 or do you want to go 1 down?
Nah, let's
9 up.
9 up, yep.
All right, you go first. You tell me your team, then I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
9th place. Worst team in the NBL. Power rankings as of now. Obviously, there's imports to be signed, but right now, on paper, who you got at 9?
Yeah, there's a little doubt in this list, but right now, I'm saying Adelaide.
Right.
Okay, that's good.
Why? Quickly, why?
Did you see those last 2 games?
But Brisbane played those too.
Oh, don't worry. I'll get to Brisbane. Adelaide's still such a young team, and anytime you're dealing with a young team, you're going to have ups and downs. They might have one game where they absolutely blow somebody out of the water, run them off the court. But generally, when you're dealing with a young team,
Johnson gets hot.
Yeah. You can't expect too much. I'm still uncertain about their import situation. I just don't see where they're going to get their points from. They're going to have Giddy running the point. So is he going to be able to handle it through a full season? And they've got a coach who I don't rate. They've got Connor Henry.
Connor Henry, he was okay with Perth or passable, and that was 10 years ago. Has he improved? Yeah, I can't fault any of these points.
He's in Sydney as well, wasn't he? And just didn't really do anything.
Yeah, Sydney. I forgot his Sydney stint. He wasn't. I had similar stuff. Or have you got more?
No, that's really it. They're just an early work in progress. And
yeah, well, I just, first thing I look at, they're sort of chipping out with one import. And even when Obi Shea left, this talk was still, oh no, we're going to fill it with a local. It's like, what? Why would you do that? Humphreys has to be big for them. And I just haven't seen it to this point. And I certainly didn't see it at those preseason games, but I'm happy to be proven wrong there. And then the scoring, you put it, like, who's going to put up points for this team, especially off the wing, where a lot of teams seem to get their points these days. Their 2 and 3 spots are filled by Sunday Dech, Dan Dillon, Jack McVay, and Brendan Tees. That's their wing. That's their 2-3 kind of spots.
Doesn't strike fear into the hearts, does it?
Jack McVay is the best of them, and I think he can improve, but you know, going off last year, this is why I've got him 9th. I think that's all needs to be said, really.
Yep.
I'll give my 8th. I'll go first this time. It's their preseason foe, the Brisbane Bullets. Yep. I just look at that team. I look at the way they played. I don't put too much stock in those preseason games. They didn't have Hodgson. They didn't have, they weren't taking it seriously as well. But Patterson out. He was, I thought, the reason why they finished fifth. He's gone.
Yep.
They've still got that issue of Sobey at the one. I just think that is an experiment where what is madness where you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome?
Yeah.
At this point, it's like he is a shooter, scorer, transition player. I don't think he's that one guy. I've seen enough to go case closed, and that's not a slide on him. It's just the position doesn't work. And then the import they've signed sort of has a few holes in his game or perceived holes in his game. And then no Will Magne, he's not coming back. So then, you got Froling in that spot.
Mm.
I see Swiss cheese. I see a lot of holes.
Yeah, I had him at number eight too. So, and for all the same reasons, I'm not really sure what I can add to that. That's a really great summary. I just think they're going to be, this looks like another season of that boring Brisbane Bullets sort of rotation.
It's so bizarre. I just don't even want as an owner who should splash out with some cash.
Oh, it's just the most boring team. So,
Magne was the one spark. I even felt Sobey was a bit caged. He was very excited with Adelaide. And then Magne on the games that he caught fire, blocked some shots. That was exciting. And Patterson hit a couple of big shots. But all those, two of those three guys I've named, they're not there anymore.
Yep.
And that's bad. That's a bad look, Andrew.
I mean, if you're going to be boring, at least win. But if you're going to be boring and lose, you do not have the mix.
I know.
Right.
And are they a defensive team? Are they a scoring team? I just...
No identity.
Yep.
And then they couldn't even sort out their quarantine situation. What was the guy who didn't even do his quarantine right? He went to some kids' clinic or something.
I didn't read up. I just saw that he skipped out on quarantine. I thought, you know what? Maybe he didn't get the memo. I don't know.
Seems like the Bullets gave up on him too. I think they basically fired him.
I barely saw him play. I watched a bit of those preseason games, but most of them. I saw him play a little bit. I didn't see a lot. Andrew, I want to know who you've got in seventh.
Look, this is where it starts to get a little bit tricky. A little bit tricky. And I don't feel like I'm probably doing justice to anybody here, but I'm going to upset somebody. I'm saying the Hawks.
Wow. Okay. I do not have the Hawks. But okay. Do tell.
But look, this is tricky. Really, there's a bit of a logjam around these sort of positions.
Oh, for sure. This 4-7 is brutal.
Yeah, really hard. And so the Hawks, it's a bit of a sight unseen issue I've got there. No idea. They may come out and just go bonkers. But at the moment, I'm looking at them just seeing inexperience, don't know how they're going to mix well together, new coach, credentialed coach, don't get me wrong, but new to that team and everything.
Sure.
I just don't know. There's just too many question marks around what's going on there for me to rate them.
Fair enough. I didn't have them there. I had the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of wax and wane on this because I'm a big Creek guy. I'm like, is Creek a guy who can get you to sort of 12 to 14 wins? And I'd like to say yes, but I'm just like, they didn't last year, but he was hurt.
Yep.
But I'll say this. Cam Glidden and Ruben Tarangi are two of their three starters. These are two guys who couldn't get on the Brisbane's rotation. Now, whether that was a Lamanis fault, or the spot was there. Yes, Taylor Braun and Singler were in that spot, but if you're good, you'd get over them or at least get some minutes. And they weren't there. And that's my huge concern with them. You're elevating two guys who were poor last year. And on paper, it's like, they're rangy and they can hit and they're quite long in defense. But I think that's a bit of a mirage. And I think with Cam Glidden, they were – and this team was good last year. They had injuries and a few bad things and didn't have any bigs. But if you think that you're going to replace John Robertson's shooter scoring and the attention he commanded on defense with either one of those two, I wouldn't be thinking that. I don't think you can replace that. And if Creek can have a great year, that's the one thing that throws off my guess is the fact that Creek now has had a huge long offseason to recoup. No NBA Summer League, no NBA itself, no FIBA World Cup. He's coming in fresh. So yeah. It's tentatively that I put them there, but as I said, two of the three starters don't do it for me.
Yeah. No, and I can appreciate where you're coming from. Like I said, it's logjam, so fair arguments. But, in this case, you're wrong.
Let's go number six.
Yeah.
It's my turn to denote a team. I put Melbourne United Is that who you've got? Don't tell me who you got, but is that who you got?
It's not who I got.
Okay.
And I, yeah.
You go, you go.
No, I was just going to say, as I was moving teams around, shuffling them up and down the board, they did spend some time there, but I moved them up.
Again, these are power rankings as I see it right now on paper. McCarron at the one. I know they've got Illy, but I'm still kind of like, import, you know, typically you need import one. And, you know, there's that bit of gamble with him at that spot. And, you know, is he ready to run a team? That's a really tough gig. Chris Golding, like, I look at the scoring on this team and who's their lineup? It's like McCarron, Golding. I don't even know who their starting three is. And then, you know, Jack White, Dave Barlow, and then Achul.
Yep.
Just look at that and I think, where's – I don't get it just yet. They've got nice flexibility, but that's not what we're rating them on. Right now it's – yeah, I don't see enough scoring.
That's a totally fair argument.
Who have you got at six?
I got Sydney.
Okay. I thought you might.
They're retooling this season. Retooling
is a good word.
Retooling the coach. I mean, it's, you may as well forget that last season existed because this is, in many ways, could be a new sort of team. How much are they going to get from Angus Glover? You know, he comes in with big raps, but everything I've ever seen from him is he seems like a bit of a frantic, out of control player. So I don't rate him as highly as what others do. I could be proven wrong, but I haven't seen it yet. Another year on Brad Newley.
Yeah, Newley's a big one. I mean, he had a resurgent year last year. Can he do it again?
Yeah.
Father time and odds would say no, but we'll see.
I mean, Daniel Kickett, same argument. Yeah, we spoke about this,
yeah.
And then where are the points coming from again? Are you going to go to Sean Bruce? Is he the guy that's going to get you get your points? It just seems like they've got some old guard guys and then some new unproven ones, and so I'm iffy on them.
I mean, I shall save it because I've got them further up the list. But yeah, I can't fault your reasoning there. Number five, I'm going to go first. I had the Sydney Kings at five.
Okay.
And I've just got in brackets Casper Ware. I know he had a bad year. I think he'll be better not under Weaver. I think when he's at his best, he's a walking 12 to 14 wins in the NBL. You pick up a few others and then they're right around the playoff hunt.
Yep.
I think that... I do worry. I've got my worries about this team. That's why I've got him in fifth. But Casper Ware, and then Didi, you're older. I think he's hopefully ready for it. You know, Sean Bruce. I think Weaver's departure, I'm not that cataclysmic about that. And what was the other thing I was going to say? I mean, Xavier Cooks. That's the other as well.
Yeah.
I'm not confident about this, but I'm going to push to the positive with Xavier Cooks. I think he came off that knee injury in Europe and then came and signed. And, you know, that's now 12 months in the past. And hopefully he's bounced back from that and he's got his shot under him. Because I looked at his numbers. He seemed to shoot well in the Bundesliga, I think he was playing at. And then all of a sudden just totally fell off. So I think there was a mechanical issue with his body.
Yeah.
And if he can change that. And that so when you say, where's the scoring come from? I would expect it comes from him. But, I mean, you were saying about the negatives of this team. I mean, they did just lose Tate, who was, I mean, his year was statistically freakish.
Oh, it's huge.
True shooting percentage, PER, points per game. He was just giving the ball, get out of the way. He was trucking at the hoop. He was fantastic. So they have lost an NBL first teamer, and that's a pretty tough gig to come. So, but I think that takes them from one to fifth. Who do you have in fifth?
Who do I have in fifth? I had Southeast Melbourne.
Wow, I had them at seven. Why are you higher on them?
I like the coach. Simon Mitchell. I like how he gets guys going and he gives a bit of a green light. And I think that his motivation and his green light will be the resurgence of Cam Glidden and Ruben Tarangi. I think both of those guys will go back to their previous one. We saw it from Ruben a couple of years ago.
Saw it from Tarangi. I just didn't see it from Glidden so much.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think Glidden's got it in him. He played for the Boomers, for goodness sake.
Inconsistency.
And has he not got something to prove this year? This is what I think.
Does,
is he got a fire lit under him? And this is what I'm hoping.
I just think the back issues are worse than people think. And he's just at his best. He had a bit of injury, so he misses a couple of games. Like, they need him. And on paper, he's an upgrade on Magin. But Magin was there every game. And, you know, Glidden, I just – he some games he's in the mid-teens, low 20s, shoots, you know, 4 or 5 from the outside. And then some games you don't even see him.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't play in the NBL. You need that consistency, I think.
I don't know. I'm seeing this team as almost like a the Steve Nash-led Suns of that era.
Their import one is crucial.
So, yeah, I mean, you've got Kyle Adnam there, who's actually a pretty serviceable player these days. Mm. But I just like the idea of them just pushing the ball, spacing, and then you've got, you know, Glidden, Tarangi, Kendall Stevens just lining up outside. And then you've got Mitch Creek, who's just like, if he gets it on a break, semi-break, fast break, I mean, lights out. It's a layup.
You're talking me into it. I see that. I just, yeah. Again, I think there's a little bit of fool's gold with this team. And I like South at the moment. I really, really like them. But I don't know. I've got them in 7. You've got them in 5th.
I'd put them higher if they wore a green uniform, not a black. But that's
of course, that's a given. Yeah. Number 4, I think it's my turn to go.
Who you got?
First. This is where I sit the Hawks. And the reason why... Yeah, I know. And after hearing your rationale, I was like, oh, dear. No, I think Daniel Dell's going to be quite good. I quite like their shooting point guard. I just think I'm not worried about points with them. I love shooting point guards in the NBL.
Yep.
They're going to play defense by the look of it. Gorgian will do that. That'll keep games close. And I think they're every chance. My big, huge concern, I know I probably shouldn't be addressing concerns when I'm from 4th, but they are weak up front. I mean,
yeah.
They're still
AJ.
Cam Bairstow and Ogilvy are going to start. Ogilvy, you know, where's his head going to be at this year? And then Bairstow, is he going to play 25 games?
Yeah.
True. He's done it for a while. And then if he goes down, it's a hodgepodge of unprovens and new guys. Their new import, they've got Max Darling, the big kid from New Zealand. So, you know, very unproven front line. So I'm not confident about them at 4, but and now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, what am I doing? But I'm in. And they've got a full roster. This is a power ranking for how they sit. They have a full roster. They're ready to go. So, and Jess gives them something. I don't know.
Yeah, the thing with the Hawks is like, what did I have? I had them at 7. You got them at 4. And I think both of those are correct. Which is sort of the situation we find ourselves in.
But I'm just really thinking now, Southeast Melbourne have Mitch Creek. You can't put a team that has Mitch Creek below a team that doesn't. He's one of the 3 best locals, and he would carry them to more wins. I'm regretting it, but I'm staying with it. The 4, I've got the Hawks. Who have you got?
Okay, well, I'm regretting this one as well because I've actually put at, what are we at now, number
4.
I've got Melbourne at 4, and I might have got this wrong.
My arms are folded now. You're going to have to sell me on this.
I am. I'm going to have to sell myself. One of my dot points here is I said, this is probably wrong and probably not the rules of the game. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and they've got 2 imports to add. Can I have like an empty slot as of the power ranking?
I will say this much. Their import slots are very convenient. They need a wing and a 5. There's no conversation about like, what are we going to do? Who's on the market? It's like wing and a 5. They can just go to an agent and say, I want a client of yours, a wing and a 5, a wing who can score and is athletic and a 5 who can rebound and defend.
Yeah.
So it's a very easy choice for them. But you were saying,
keep going. And I think, what I like, I think there's a dark horse here, Udai Baba.
Japanese guy.
Yeah, I think he might surprise some people. I think he might contribute more to their roster than what perhaps we had anticipated.
I just worry if they're getting an import wing, where's his minutes? You know, Golding wants 30. McCarron's going to want 30. You got Illy kind of soaking up some 1 and 2 spot. And then they've got a scoring wing, you know, he's looking at 10 to 15.
You could go 4 or 5 with the roster spots.
That's true.
Yeah, and just get the guy like a Tate style guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I'd be very interested to see what they do, and I think they've been holding off. I will say, actually, no, we'll talk about Melbourne United in depth afterwards.
Yeah.
Let's go to number.
I'm feeling a little. As I look at this team, I'm thinking I probably rated them too highly, and probably the Hawks fans will be angry at me because they probably deserve to be higher than Melbourne.
I just think on paper the Kings have got a better team right now.
Yeah.
Casper Ware will lead you to wins.
It's a work in progress. It's early in the season.
Number three. Who have you got sitting in three? This is where it gets very interesting. I think all those 4 through 9 are very debatable. Well, yep. 4 through 7 are debatable. I think anyway. But 1 through 3, this is a knife's edge. Who you got?
All right. It is a knife's edge. I've got Perth at number 3.
Wow. Okay. I do not. Why have you got Perth?
Okay. I think they'll miss Damian Martin more than they realize. Not just for his on-court stuff, but for everything else he
and also contributes. Just Mitch Norton, like he misses time every year.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not. He might be a bit more of a scorer than Damian Martin was, but overall, I think you're losing out with Mitch Norton in that place.
Yeah, I'd agree.
You've lost Nick Kay. Geez, that's another massive
perennial hit. NBL first teamer.
Yeah, you just can't replace guys like that, especially when they're locals. So yeah, big outs. On the bright side, you've still got the league's best player, Bryce Cotton.
Best ever player, yeah.
You've got a guy like Todd Blanchfield probably coming in with something to prove.
Pretty good. And also pretty good like for like with Tarico White.
Yeah.
You know, I think they got pretty lucky. I mean, the guy you want to replace him with is probably Creek as far as locals go.
Yeah.
But Blanchfield, like it's a pretty good – I thought he always played pretty good defense and – I think more than anything, you say point to prove. I think almost a relief. He went to that Illawarra team. It was a nightmare on and off the court. Mm. Worried about your money, worried about your minutes, worried about what is this coach going to come in and design? What player are they going to come up with next? What's Mello Ball going to do on the next play? He just now gets a chance to have a little bit of fun with his play. And yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. The other thing interesting will be how good the imports are for the Wildcats. You know, John Mooney and whoever else. Bryce Cotton, well, whether it is Bryce Cotton or whether it's one more, you know, that's the big question mark as well. So it'd be really, but I think, so I'm putting them 3 because they've still got the culture and they've still got the skill level, but it really is a transition year. How much do they blood their young guys, get them some minutes, get them ready for the next season as well?
All good points. Yeah.
Number 3.
You're not high on Mooney by the sound of it. You've said this before.
I'm not. And look, he didn't get drafted. So,
he did not get drafted. This is true. I actually think that bodes well for him. I think if you're going to be drafted, like he's not a project. I think teams look at him and go, we know exactly what he is. He is a relatively unathletic, rebounding, big body. This is not where the NBA is trending. I actually look at that with a degree of optimism. I know what I said before about Justinian Jessup, but I look at Mooney not getting drafted as they are just like, yep, he is a European player, grounded and strong. Good luck. And they have just put – and for that reason, I think Wildcats – I'm a little bit higher on Mooney than you are. I think he's going to be good. I think he can shoot it. And I think more than anything, he is going to rebound. And that has just proved so successful in the NBL and especially for the Wildcats. But,
true. Who have you got?
At 3, I had the Breakers.
Oh, okay.
And here's why. I see sharing the ball issues. I really do. Their lineup's going to be both Websters.
Yep.
Patterson. Where does Abercrombie, does he play that 3-4 role? He probably does. And then Finn Delaney at the 5, that's probably their closing lineup, you would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Corey Webster likes to catch it and shoot it and feel the leather. Lamar Patterson likes to catch it and shoot leather. And I love Lamar Patterson, but to this point, he has only been a part of teams that finish around this area, 3, more like 4-5. And as much as I think he's good, you know, he's conditioning towards the start of the year and it's only a 28-game season. If you come in and drop a few games early, which Breakers did last year, which the Bullets seem to do as well. You haven't got that luxury, and he's playing in Puerto Rico now, so hopefully that's not an issue, but we've had a long, strange offseason. A lot of sitting around, a lot of isolation, just saying. So, but sharing the ball issues is the big one. And also, I thought, was Abercrombie's year last year an aberration? You know, at his age, whatever it is, late 30s, you know, can he replicate that? Because they're going to need him to, because he was spectacular.
Yeah, he was.
That's my doubt. But I feel like I'm talking myself out of why they're no good. They're still in the 3rd spot. And I don't, and this again, this is all on a knife's edge. So they're still real good. Patterson's still an amazing player. And Ty Webster and Corey Webster are good too. But who do you have in 3?
I'm moving up to 2 now. So number 2, I had New Zealand. So I like what they've got. Similar concerns about sharing the ball, but just the depth of talent. I mean, really,
it doesn't really matter who hogs the ball and shoots it this time up. It's probably going to go in because just the talent level they've got.
That's a good team.
Even Rob Lowe as well, you know, like
they're three off the bench are going to be what?
Rob Lowe. It's just weapons all the way through. I don't really see they're almost one of these teams where they could structure two equivalent they have the starting five, but they not load the starting five. Hold a player back, hold one of your talented players back for the bench and just have him dominate the bench unit.
Yeah, right.
I just think they've got so many options there. As long as they buy into it and they don't get, ego driven, there's no way they can't be right.
I just look at, and I'll be more specific. I look at Corey Webster, like him as a player, but had this great FIBA World Cup, had that issue with the Breakers where he wanted to play in Turkey. They denied him that right. Then they bought him out and let him go to China. It was just weird. And then they started winning like crazy without him. Well, now he's just starting too.
Yeah,
and probably your best shooter scorer other than Patterson is, but your second best option, and then his brother's there, and hub season, and I just see a lot of time together. I don't know, I have my doubt.
Yeah,
at two, I have Cairns Taipans. You have one. I have at two, and I tell you why. The loss of DJ Newble, but that's kind of relative because everyone's lost their third import. But I feel like he was. This team more than ever relied on the three of their production so much. I mean, they spent big on three imports and then patched it together with locals who were, what they were. But the reason why they are two, Machado's fantastic, brilliant, second best player in the league. And Cam Oliver, now a year older, presumably a year better, going into his mid-20s. Mirko Jeric, can he replicate what he did? He shot the heck out of it. Yep. I don't see why not. Kwat Noi, when I say the loss of DJ Newball's bad, when I look at who's replacing him, I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty convenient. Kwat Noi had a really good start to the year before he got hurt. And then Majuk Deng is the guy who I kind of a little bit more worried about with his just defensively. He's never been that type of guy. But, I mean, they were one win away from the finals. They won a lot of games. They lost to Illawarra early in the year three times. That doesn't happen again. So that's why I have them two. Have you got a word on them, or who have you got it to?
No, New Zealand was my two.
Of course.
Yep, so I'm up to number one now. So obviously process of elimination, Cairns Taipans number one.
And by process of elimination, I've still got Perth.
Mainly on the with Cairns, mainly for number one, mainly on the back of their import duo. Like, yes, you're right, and I think they will miss DJ, but Machado will just get open looks for everybody.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think he'll just set this team up so nicely. Cam Oliver, I don't know who's going to stop him.
He's on track for NBL first team. If he doesn't get NBL first team, that's would be a really bad result for him. Yep. Really bad.
Yep. I'm relying on Kwat Noi to carry on and continue his improvement. And then I think it's almost like the unfashionable bench unit.
Yeah.
And I came around to them a bit last season because Krzyzewicz was suddenly like, he was lights out. Yeah, you couldn't leave him open.
Bit rangy, bigger body, kind of got at the rack a little bit. Yeah, he was good.
Sort of reminds me of the old Rupert Sapwell era.
Yeah, I get that.
You look at the names and you're like, we shouldn't be that fearful of those teams. And yet he's banging threes off the backboard. It's kind of like that's the vibe I'm getting from this Cairns Taipans. Really fun. I think they'll enjoy playing with each other.
And the consistency's back. Like, I think, what do you call it, year-to-year consistency of the roster is important. And they've got their whole starting five, four of their five starters are returning, and then their entire real contributors off the bench. Najuai, Jared Kenny, not Rob Lowe, he was there the year before. Who's the other guy who came off their bench? Krzyzewicz, we're just talking about him.
Yep.
Though they're all back.
And
plus Naitai. Capable.
And it seems like they love playing for Mike Kelly as well. So don't underestimate the extra effort that's put in when you like your coach. And finally, big home court advantage. Nobody likes traveling to Cairns, and they're
long
in
way
the
to go.
Yeah, and then you go all that way, and then you're playing in a bloody Bunnings shed. It's like, what a letdown! So how do you get motivated to win that game?
I had this interview. I talked to Jamie O'Loughlin, the assistant coach. I don't know if you heard it or not yet, but
not yet.
When I said to him, I was like. It's like, how far is it from Brisbane to Cairns? And how far would you presume the drive is from Brisbane to Cairns?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, driving, what, 6 hours?
He said it was 20.
Oh, geez, really?
Can that be right? And he said you break it up into 4-hour increments. Or maybe he meant to Sydney. No, I think he seriously meant, I don't know what he meant now, but the number 20 was thrown out. The point is, Cairns is a long way. It's a long way up that peninsula, the Cape of Cape York. Oh no, I'm just committing to it now.
I'm mapping this as you speak.
I have, yeah, do indeed.
He's not wrong. It's 19 hours and 11 minutes
from Cairns to Brisbane.
Yes, 1,700 wow. kilometers.
There you go. He said you break it up in 4 5-hour increments or 5 4-hour increments, and you go from I forget the order he said, but you know, you go from Brisbane to Rockhampton, Rockhampton to Mackay, Mackay to somewhere else, up to Cairns. Like, it is a huge country.
Goodness,
I know, right? It shook my world. So thank you, Jamie, for giving me that. But yeah, let's put geography and topography to one side. Perth Wildcats is my number one team. And I know you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but my answers are pretty simple.
Yep.
I'm higher on John Mooney than you are.
Yep.
They still have Bryce Cotton. Bryce Cotton is the best player in the NBL. As much as basketball is a team game and people like to stress culture and whatever else, there is one ball, and at the end of games, it stops in one man's hands on either team, and they still have the best player in the NBL and the best player ever. And when he's got it, he doesn't miss, and he just consumes. You talk about Machado getting guys looks, and he totally does. Cotton just commands so much attention that it's a pass without him having the ball. I just think, they're chasing a three-peat, and he's going to naturalize, and they'll get a third one. I know we're doing power rankings right of now, but I still think they're the best team because Jesse Wagstaff, he's the best 3-4 in the league still at his age, not because he can score, but because he does everything else. And I just look at Mooney and I think he's going to lead the league in offensive rebounds and replicate K pretty well. Not as well, but pretty well in a diminished big man talented league. So that's why I've got him. And I think Norton's going to do a serviceable job. You talked me into them dropping off with him with Damian Martin's departure, but I just think he's a little bit more of an offensive threat and the defense is still there. I agree with you in some sense with Damian Martin, and other times I don't. I mean, he was barely there last year anyway, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Blanchfield. Yeah, so that's why I've got the Wildcats.
Okay. So not a little bit of differential there.
A little bit of difference. But,
I think the big one to come out of this is just that midfield.
4-7.
Yeah, how do you – does that shake out? Could anybody's guess. But don't worry, after the first round of the new season, we will have a clear power ranking situation.
Oh, for sure.
We'll exactly know.
Once these imports are signed, you'll know. And I think the big move is a Melbourne. I think they're just really convenient for the imports to slot in and then just shoot up into the top four.
Yep.
I'm going to reassess the Hawks. I think they look good now while they've got their imports signed, but we'll just kind of see where they end up. And then Sydney. Don't forget, Sydney have got a second import. That's sign a big guy who's good. Imagine if Sydney signed Sean Long. Not that it's going to happen, but they sign a player like Sean Long. They're in the conversation for sure.
Yeah.
Let's jump on. I want to talk about Melbourne United. You spoke about this last week. You kind of said, well, what are they doing?
Yeah.
And it's almost as if hearing that, they put out this video saying like, all right, we're doing an off-season recap and a bit of thing, whatever, keeping fans abreast of what's going on, because they have been very, very quiet for what is a big market, if not the second biggest market behind Perth.
It's nice to know I have that kind of power. You know, I can call them out and they do something, they respond. It's good to see.
We talked about it a little bit before. I have them at what, sixth? You have them at fourth. It's interesting. And I think what I wanted to look at more was when you're looking at these teams, it's really important to not just look at what they've got on paper or who they might sign or who they're rumored to sign, but look at who owns these teams. And it's kind of like when you're buying a used car. Look at the car, look at the mileage, but also look at the owner. Who are they? What are they wearing? Are they presentable? Are they good people? You know, they can tell you as much about the car as not. And I'm looking at Melbourne United, and I kind of look at their ownership group. They've got Larry Kay.
Uh-huh.
Larry Kesselman. He's in construction, which in COVID times I wouldn't have thought would be terribly affected. Might actually see a little bit of an upkick. Am I right in that, Andrew?
Oh, geez. Good question. I don't really know.
And then... but he's NBL owner. The NBL's certainly, you know, had these delays to the season. Like, I think he'd be getting pretty sick of taking money and putting it in the NBL. So maybe is he looking to tighten the purse spring, the purse strings on Melbourne United? They've got another guy, Michael Sleppy.
Sloopy, is it? I don't know how you pronounce that now, but yeah, I know the
from Andiamo Building Solutions. So yeah, again, yep. Construction pretty good under COVID. But then I look at Croc Media as the other ownership group, Craig Hutchison.
Yep.
And if you type in Croc Media into Google, one of the articles comes up, and this is from May 2020, not 2 years ago, from a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, the headline of the article: Croc Media gets financial lifeline. And then another one reads, Craig Hutchinson's move to save SEN, Croc Media, .. You have to pay for the article, and I didn't. So I've only read the headlines. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, you'd hope, or perhaps it's completely made up. But you look at those, and I think, maybe this team's not so keen to spend. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, there could be some truth to that. The one thing I would say, though, is that I don't think Larry Kesselman, great savior of our league, I don't think he wants to be attached to a losing team. I think he,
fair point.
That's the, you know, Melbourne at the end of the day, that's the team that got him into buying the whole league, right? That's the only reason he's bought it, because he was a Melbourne guy. So I don't think he wants to be attached to a losing team. So I think there'll be a fair amount of pressure to get some pretty good imports.
Yeah, I think.
And I think he'll be putting the word on his owners. And saying, hey guys, look, I've, how much money have I lost on the NBL? Screw it. You can lose some money on Melbourne United.
Yeah, fair point. I think in a bearer market, maybe other teams aren't spending, maybe they're going to zig when people are zagging. Yeah.
But it's a fair, look, until they do something, you can only judge them by what's in front of us, right? And so far, you would say
they lost out on Patterson. And the thing is, I think they're going to sign. Does Hobson make sense for them? Hobson, pardon me, from the Breakers. Is he a three?
Oh, who cares? You just get him if he's around. You find a way, right?
Yeah, I just think he's the perfect fit for them. He's the guy they should be getting. But they sort of lost out. Him or Patterson, I thought, were the guys that you were going to go with in NBL. And the fact they missed out on Patterson would suggest to me that maybe they're gone Hobson, and he's just sort of just
dithering.
Weighing his options, but just look at this team on paper. We spoke about it a little bit before, but Mitch McCarron, Shay Ely, Sam Short, Chris Golding, Japanese guy, Baba.
Yep.
Sam McDaniel, who's their only real wing or three guy, but that'll surely change. Dave Barlow, Jack White, Joe Luala-Chul. They're the players I thought were kind of filling out their depth charters with any seriousness. As we said, those imports slot in quite nicely, but that backcourt, an all Australian backcourt of McCarron and Golding.
Well, we know how that usually works out. If you go all Aussie backcourt, you usually don't win.
And that's where Hobson kind of blurs the line where, he is a, handle the ball at quarter court and make plays. So I think he's crucial for them. And they said they're going to have an announcement of a signing in the next week. I watched the little video, which.
Okay. Well, if it's not Hobson or somebody of his equivalent talent, they are in trouble. They need somebody who can reliably get a bucket
and get to the basket.
And I don't think Goulding's not that. Yeah. As much as they talk him up, Mitch McCarron.
I like Mitch McCarron. I do, but I don't think he has that mentality.
Yeah, he hasn't got that takeover sort of approach. Like, give me the ball, clock's winding down. Don't worry.
If I'm open, he's not the type of player who, if I'm open 10 times in a row, I'm going to shoot it 10 times in a row. He'd shoot it twice, make it, and then be like, oh, well, better share around.
So
I think that's more him. And that's not a slight on him, I don't think. Yeah. But I think this team, you were saying, Andrew,
I'm wondering why I put them so high now, because I'm looking at it as well and thinking that you're talking about their backcourt, but then you got the front court, Jack White, out of college, unproven, maybe good, but he's not going to be.
No, 40.
Barlow's ancient. Yeah, the corpse of David Barlow running around.
Bless him.
Best looking corpse ever, by the way. Great biceps.
I don't know how he does it. There's high cheekbones. They are the secret to not looking older, but that's a different conversation.
And then you've got Achul, who seems to be more excited about step back Dirk Nowitzki style shooting than
really catapults them up there, you know. Nice player though, but I look at it and they're the only team without someone in the NBL first or second team.
Yeah.
Adelaide and Brisbane. No, Adelaide have Johnson. Brisbane do not. Southeast Melbourne should have had Creek. I'm going to count him. Sydney had Casper Ware, and well, they didn't. Tate's gone. The Hawks don't. New Zealand do with Patterson. You know, so they're, you know, when you talk about them on paper, like they don't have that, you know, rock solid NBL first teamer. And typically, teams that don't have one don't do particularly well. I think this team, and I've seen him train with this team, I think this team wants Jock Landale so bad they can taste it. I think they want to get an import wing like Hobson and give Landale import money. I just see him training and just that storyline plays great in Melbourne. This is, you know, the Melbourne Tigers of Andrew Gaze, where it's like, you know, your star player needs to be an Australian. I think that just plays well in that market.
Yep.
And they would just be gagging. So they're just hanging out for Landale to either get or not get one of those NBA two ways.
Yeah,
which are drying up really fast, and we'll talk about that in a second in the program. But I think that one's so bad they can taste it, and the fit seems to work in my
eyes. Oh, absolutely, he would slot right in, perfect, and that would change everything, wouldn't it? If you should put those two players into this roster, and suddenly you're talking, wow, they could be top two, top three,
definitely for sure. Yeah. Speaking of Landale, let's move on. Big ticket locals still available because the imports could come from anywhere, but.
Yep.
And this was mainly centered around Dellavedova. He's re-signed with the Cavaliers. I thought he was really unlikely to do that. When I then looked at, we were talking about it off air, Andrew and I, when you look at the financial stuff around him, where he signed, because he got 8 years experience, he would have signed for $2.5 million, of which the NBA pays anything over 1.6, because that's the way they do it with veterans minimums on 1 year deals specifically.
Yep.
He's also got bird rights. He's played for a team for 3 consecutive seasons, or maybe 4. So his money doesn't count against the cap. When you put all that together and the fact he's low maintenance, his signing actually made a fair degree of sense. But here are the big ticket locals still available.
Okay.
We spoke about Jock Landale.
Yep.
Thon Maker is in trouble. Just got released, his option got declined by the Detroit Pistons. And he's not eligible for a two-way. This is the most important thing. A two-way contract in the NBA is where you can go between the G League and that.
Yep.
You have to have fewer than 4 years of NBA experience. This was his fourth season.
Oh, right. Interesting.
I believe so anyway. So I don't think he can get on a two-way. So he needs a guaranteed. He needs to be one of those 15 roster spots. Now, when we talk about doing that, this guy Bobby Marks, who's an ESPN, not ESPN, I think he's Athletic, but NBA reporter, 90% of NBA roster spots are filled.
Whew.
By that virtue, if there's 17 on a team, you have 15 spots, 2 two-way deals. That's 17 per team. 30 times 17 is 510. 510 times 0.89, because it's actually 89% of the rosters are filled. That's 450. 510 deducting 454 is 56. There are 56 roster spots. But
mathematics, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But 56, most of the second round picks that were drafted haven't been signed yet.
Okay.
So let's take away our further. You could take anywhere from sort of 15 to 30. Let's take the whole 30 for math's sake. There are 26 spots remaining that are both a blur of two-way and full roster spots.
Yep.
So that number could be anywhere from 26 to 50-ish. And the question then is, the likes of Jock Landale, Thon Maker, Ryan Brokoff, Jonah Bolden, are they in that conversation of the best 25 to 50 guys for those spots?
Yep.
Very difficult to gauge.
Yep. Yeah,
I've done a lot of talking, but
I've
set the table. I think you look at those names, Jock Landale. I think if he's not going to the NBA, I think he may consider the NBL. I don't think he wants a part of Europe anymore. He's been there, done that, right? And the thing is, the EuroLeague season is on right now.
Yeah,
if he wanted to be there, wouldn't he be there? Seems like he's only too willing to kind of take the hit on money, but I don't know. Ryan Brokoff has got big interest from Olympiakos. I would be very, very surprised to see him in the NBL. He's young. So. He's either NBA or he's Euro. There's too much money on the table over there.
Yeah.
Jonah Bolden, same thing.
Yeah. Jonah Bolden. The thing that I wouldn't take him in the NBA. I don't think European teams would be that interested. I don't know why I'm saying that. Maybe they would. I don't really know, but I just think maybe the NBL teams might not be interested either, which is a weird thing to say.
Whoa!
I think
Bolden.
Look, somebody would take a flyer, I guess. Why not? But I just don't think you can.
You don't think he's good?
I don't think from what I've seen, not that good. Like, good, don't get me wrong, good, but not amazing. Not like, whoa, we've signed him, I'm so pumped. I just think you can't underestimate the damage he did for his own reputation with that whole Boomers fiasco.
I just think that really
burnt him.
I saw that game against Canada and I thought, oh, he can play. And Landau really went off the boil at the World Cup. I mean, he was playing well behind Kay.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, Jonah Bolden's spot minutes wouldn't hurt him. No, I like Bolden. I think he's a good player. His career is just, I wouldn't say free fall, that's exaggerating, but his career is, where is he at? Well, what's going on here? Had these 10-day contracts with Phoenix, didn't make the bubble.
Yeah.
He's in a weird spot, but no, yeah. I think European teams would snap him up in a heartbeat. Rangy, athletic, big, with a bit of NBA heat. That's just, mamma mia. That's a bad caricature, but I think they go there. But the guy who I have the most worry for is Thon McCurr. And
bless
him, I haven't seen a lot of his games. I just don't see any indication that he's a good player.
Well, there's doubts about how old he is as well, right?
So yeah,
he could be 41, you know?
I just cannot put on weight. So the defense is iffy. The shot is okay. It's not great. I don't see if he was signed by Melbourne United, and he's their starting center. I would be like, oh, good luck defending Cam Oliver. Good luck keeping Mooney off the board. Yeah. I would have no, and even I was like, Humphreys is a bigger, better body. So, yeah, Thon McCurr is in a bit of. I wish him all the best. I don't know what to say.
It's such a shame. Shame for the local, for the NBL that Dele re-signed.
Oh, we were talking about this. He was the one who I was most convinced at his age, at 30. I just thought
just would have been awesome to have him come back.
Yeah, and I was thinking of Matt Logue's book, Hoop Dreams Down Under, where the Mark Bradke chapter, where he goes, well, to be honest, the NBA money wasn't great. It was a bit better, but I could have spent my time cheering on people younger than me who I didn't care about from the bench, or I could go and be a player and contribute.
Yeah.
I think that's the
That's a great situation. Mature summation. That's like, that's an older player, isn't it? He's saying, look, who cares? Yeah, at the end of the day, sort of like, who cares about the NBA, you know, in a way?
Yeah.
I think there's too much fetishization of the NBA these days, maybe. Everybody has it as like their dream to be in the NBA. And I sort of touched on this last episode, saying like, why, what's wrong with having a really great playing career in the NBL?
Oh, to me, the
apart dream from career, not having millions of dollars at the end of it,
fair call. That'd be a bit of a drag.
That would be a bummer. But I don't know. Like, let's assume you've made decent money. You've, like Dele, for instance, you've made your NBA millions, right? What difference does it make?
He made $55 million, mate, playing basketball thereabouts.
So he's pretty much okay.
US.
I think his superannuation's okay.
Unless he spent it all on magic beans, he's going to be just fine.
So why not the last couple of seasons come back and get some?
When you're good, though, like he can come back in 3 years. It's not the same. Yeah. Right now he's 30. He's got a chance. He could be NBL first team for sure.
And get out of that whole like NBA, you know, like I'm taking you kind of thing. You know, like just hang around with some Australians who are like, hey, mate, good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
I just think the average age goes up. If you're on an NBA team, your average age is probably mid-20s. If you're on an NBL team, like at some stunning lineups of guys, you know, really close to their 30s or in and around.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, the dream career I would think is if you think NBA crowds are good, if you think you're going to Denver and you're going to see a crowd that's like, well, yay, go Nuggets. Try taking it to Europe and playing over there and playing for somewhere in Greece. You don't know crowds. You do not know crowds until you've seen these things. The buzz that you get playing there, like that is a angry, amazing crowd. So I think if you're a player and you haven't played in Europe, I think you're missing out big time, because I've seen NBA crowds, I've been a part of NBA crowds, and they're okay, but they're, you know, it's very kind of like, all right, we're having fun now.
Yes.
Whereas European crowds are like, this isn't fun. Who said this was going to be fun? This is, you live and breathe by every minute. They're absolutely mental. So how any player could not want to be a part of that? I don't know, but, and the money's not bad either if you can actually get your hands on it. But yeah, Daly's the one who would have been a fun one to see in the NBL, just for lifestyle for him. But
yeah.
Didn't happen.
No.
Andrew, I think we've reached the end of this. There's not a lot else. Any parting words?
No, we're getting close to the season. It is going to happen. Stay positive, everybody.
Early next year. Again, we were very negative on the season going ahead last episode, but you can have all the plans in the world.
Yeah.
What I'll be looking at is not the start date and the schedule thereafter. That to me is irrelevant. What I'll be looking at is what are the contingencies if and when a fan or a fanzer get this thing? What happens if a player gets it? What happens if a coach gets it? Are they going to widen rosters in case of that? Because if I don't see those sort of contingencies, I'm going to continue to hold my breath, and I'm sure you will too.
I will. Come on, NBL. Do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Have contingencies. Think ahead.
Yep.
Andrew, pleasure.
Likewise. I love this. I love talking NBL.